Is there Rick Pearson? No.
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 That's a long way to go on a divvy.
Yeah. Can you especially when you've got like a, you're trying to carry a sink with you.
Sure.
Hey, can you check that for me? If that's just, I think it's supposed to say 5 blocks, but that's all right. We'll find it. Can you find that out for me? That is just 5 miles east of Y. Well, it's got to be closer to something else that we know of. All right. That's not why we called.
No.
Rick Pearson is here. And Rick Pearson, of course, you know him, you love him. He's a political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And what a, well, first of all, I'm so confused. I look at the papers and I stop and I think to myself, what? This Bruce Rauner, what? Now, the public schools, and he wants them to go bankrupt, but then they can't go bankrupt. But then the mayor says that maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't. I am so lost in this story and I need you to explain it to me.
And it gets even worse because right now, as we're speaking on the floor of the Illinois Senate, they're voting on a bill, a Democratic-sponsored bill that would change the state school aid formula and in a way that also would provide hundreds of millions of dollars to the Chicago public schools. School aid funding is perhaps the most complex issue that exists in Illinois. And it all really stems from the fact that unlike other states, the bulk of the money to run schools comes from local property taxes.
Okay.
In most other states, the state assumes the majority funding. So when you have this basic inequity that exists in Illinois that really determines the quality of schools and opportunities for children based on zip codes.
No question.
And that brings up the fairness issue. Mm-hmm. So the job of the state ostensibly is to try to supplement funding
right.
to those poorer districts.
Right, so that they get...
So they can at least achieve some kind of parity. But in reality, that doesn't exist because there are so many ways that the school funding formula has special carve-outs.
So there was some talk about property. Over the years, there's been talk about assuming, increasing
the tax
from an income tax, increasing the income tax in the state of Illinois, reducing property taxes, and allowing there to be a net benefit to the taxpayer in theory.
Right. But, I mean, and that goes back to Jim Edgar was the last governor that actually tried that, and that didn't go anywhere. Inherent in everything with school funding is that there are always going to be winners and there's always going to be losers. And it becomes a very parochial game in Springfield that really transcends partisan lines over, you know, who are the winners, who are the losers.
So where does this go right now?
Right now, what you have is that you have the governor saying he thinks that the school aid formula ought to be rewritten, but it's so complex it'll take too much time. So just pass a bill, a clean bill, with a lot of money in it so that schools can be assured of opening in the fall and that no school district loses any money.
And that could be separate from a budget, from an overall overarching budget, because it's piecemeal like they've been doing everything else.
No, except that's part of why we're still kind of in this mess, too, is, I mean, this piecemealing of the budget, and you still have so many social service agencies that are out there that, you know, are getting nothing. They're not covered. You've got higher ed, which, though they passed that emergency $600 million appropriation a few weeks ago, you still ended up having layoffs at schools. And you have, quite frankly, you have high school guidance counselors telling kids, if you're thinking about going to Illinois School of Higher Education, you might want to rethink that.
Is there anyone in government right now who disagrees that the current system disproportionately favors richer districts over poorer districts?
And no one disagrees
with
that.
Everyone's on the page that there's something wrong with the system. It's just how do you change it? And it's complicated.
Right. And when you take a look at like the suburban schools where, you know, very little of their money, of these stronger school districts, very little of their money comes from the state. But that having been said, they're not willing to give up that small share that they get and have it go to downstate, to have it go to Chicago.
Because downstate has the same problem that Chicago does in some respects.
Downstate has, I think, a much greater problem. And you look at the rural economy in Illinois, and, you know, it's fallen apart. In fact, it's kind of reminds me of like back in the day when they were consolidating post offices, and those post offices were like the last identity of these small towns. Now it's the schools. And you're looking at schools having to close, students, you know, traversing even longer for a school day. And then when they get to school, what kind of educational opportunities do they really have?
All right.
Sure. I mean, it's so important what how good your school is determining a lot of times how much of an opportunity you have later in life if you don't have the exposure early on.
And it goes to that fundamental thing. You find me a politician in Illinois that doesn't start out somewhere in their speech, education is my number one priority.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Right.
Let's see exactly where it goes from there. Explain another thing to me, though, too, because when it comes to this very complicated system of funding, what I keep hearing is that taxpayers in Chicago pay to our teachers' pensions, but that we do not, and we also pay to pensions statewide, but that the reverse is not true. Statewide taxpayers do not pay into the Chicago pension system.
That's correct. Chicago is the only school district in the state where its local property taxpayers are paying for the pensions. The bulk of it for districts outside Chicago is being paid as a state appropriation through income taxes. This is an issue that Mayor Emanuel has raised, this kind of duopoly system, and that he wants parity, and that if the state's going to pick up other school districts' pension costs, they ought to pick up CPS pension costs as well. Speaker Madigan, on the other hand, is of the view that the state shouldn't pick up those pension costs at all to anybody and let the local school districts pick up those pension costs, which, of course, could result in even higher property taxes.
All right. Well, okay.
That doesn't seem clear.
Can I just tell you something? No, I'm no clearer on this now. I'm no clearer.
Well, I think it's almost written on purpose to be complex so that we don't understand it. I mean, it's just, come on.
Well,
I think there's only one guy I ever met in 30 years of covering the Illinois General Assembly who actually knew what was in the school aid formula. I mean,
sure.
That's truly, I mean, there's special, you know.
When is this going to be over?
I
asked you this like last, I don't remember, July. I asked you July when they didn't have a budget. I go, when's it going to be
Rick
over?
Rick has all the answers
and you
on
said,
that.
And you said November. And here we are in May. And I think I also asked you, Rick, is Donald Trump going to be the candidate?
See,
and
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah,
too.
And then, of course, and then November. And you go, well, I don't think so. And now it's May. And I don't know. What is happening?
This is why I don't make predictions.
I'm in a nightmare. I don't understand any of what's happening here.
Just the other day, there was a panel at the Chicago City Club, and State Senator Daniel Biss of Evanston was on it, and he referred to himself as Little Dark Rain Cloud, which is kind of how I feel every time I come in and talk to you guys.
Little Dark Rain Cloud.
I know, yes. You are the Little Dark Rain Cloud.
Yes, that was his Lakota name.
Yes, indeed.
What is your... Well, let me just ask you this.
Sure.
If we get... Now, it's, you know, this would be the time that we'd all be talking about the 2017 budget. Right?
That is part of the conversation.
Right. So now that they never had a 2016 budget,
right,
did we save money?
No. In fact, because of these court orders and everything else, that we're spending basically $36 billion, $38 billion on a $32 billion base. So there's that $6 billion gap, and that's all going into the unpaid bills file. So that's going to have to be dealt with.
So they do at some point. The tax structure is going to be addressed somewhere or another.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because the governor has said, you know, if you go along with some of my pro-business union weakening agenda, that he'll talk more revenue. Now he's using the term tax reform. I've never heard of the concept of raising taxes as reform before, but there are ways to deal with the tax structure.
Well, I mean, he does have... I mean, here's the one thing, that as much as Bruce Rauner... And he's a strange political type because he's gone totally subterranean, right? Doesn't make a lot of press available to the press. He's working behind the scenes, but there you talk to people with whom he would ostensibly be working, and they go, we haven't heard from him. I mean, he's sort of waiting people out here, it appears to me. And he does want to change because we do have a pension bubble. We do have a problem. There does need to be some reform on the public sector unions here in Illinois. And I just don't know that you're going to get that with Madigan. Culleton, maybe, but you're not going to get it with Madigan.
And quite frankly, given the past court rulings, there's not much incentive for the unions to say, hey, we recognize there's a problem because the courts have basically said, you got to pay up.
Yeah.
You got to pay up. So that makes that whole aspect difficult. But sure, there are things about, if you want to talk about tax reform in a way, there's the issue of the fact of Illinois' sales tax doesn't tax services. and that happens in a lot of other states. And ostensibly, you could broaden.
Did you hear what he just said?
I did hear that.
Do you know what he's talking about? He's talking about taxing us now.
Talking about haircuts.
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about advertising.
Yeah. No, I'm
sure.
Not. I've been asked about that several times by various people
I'll
here
bet in this building.
Yes, and,
what the hell are you doing there, Rick?
And I've suggested that no, you're not, I don't think you're going to find that as a starter at all. But what I'm talking about, oil.
No, I want to see the newspapers and television and radio turn on politicians like you've never seen before.
Terrible
go ahead, try
idea.
To tax our business then.
Well, but take for example when you go to get the oil change in the car.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You pay tax on the oil. You pay tax on the filter.
And then you got a $5 fee that I just, isn't there? Like
well, that's the disposal. Recycling disposal fee. But you don't pay tax on the labor.
Oh, I like that, the recycling disposal fee. Hey,
I saw that. I'm like, oh, gosh,
one of my favorite, Illinois has hundreds of funds, government funds. And my favorite is the Lust Fund.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Illinois has a Lust Fund.
Yeah,
yes.
What happens there?
What's that all about?
Leaking underground storage tanks.
Oh, it's not so sexy.
It's to clean up the old gas
That's
stations.
That's code for something.
Ted Cruz would have a field day with that. He would love the Lust tank.
Lucifer and Lust, yes.
There he is. Leaking underground storage tanks.
All right, stay right here, Rick. I want to ask you about Trump because there's something I want to ask you about.
All
well,
right.
He's picking his, he has his VP shortlist out.
Yes, indeed.
He just released
five to six people.
Yes.
And wait, is the list actually out?
We'll tell you what we know about it. I don't think we should reveal it.
All right, stay right here.
Plan your home improvement and DIY project Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini, 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11. Back with Little Dark Storm Cloud. That was it. Rick Pearson.
Little Dark Storm Cloud. Now I would let me just ask you something, Rick Pearson, political reporter extraordinaire, Chicago Tribune. Do you think now the short list is coming out of Donald Trump's vice presidential candidates because he's doing everything the other way, like he's already announced his transition team. Before he was even elected to office, before he's even actually the official nominee, he's already announced his transition team. He's now announcing his vice presidential. Now that can happen. That happens in advance of the convention, now traditionally. But we're still 6 weeks away. From their convention, from the Republican convention. So. I don't understand this, but Chris Christie's name is now popped on the shortlist for vice presidential candidates, who's also his transition chief. He only knows one guy, it appears.
Well, and he knows people on TV, too. So wait to see if anybody on the Fox News channel is named.
Well, actually, according to the AP who had this interview with Trump, that these five or six people, including Christie, are people from elected government backgrounds. And that part of that is that means they've already been vetted. What does that mean?
Well, just mean they've been vetted doesn't mean that they've been elected. Doesn't mean they've been vetted.
Well, Newt Gingrich is one that's named often comes up.
Right, but vetted in a way that unlike picking people from some other background where they would have to start a vetting process all over again. But certainly by trying to pick somebody that's had some elected experience, and he'd said this before that he wanted somebody that could walk into the United States Senate and be able to. Work on an agenda kind of thing. But still, I think we need to wait and see what happens when he comes to Washington and sits down with Paul Ryan. And because this Ryan Trump factor, I think, mm-hmm. really is emblematic of the establishment versus Trump. And that's not going to go away anytime soon, despite the fact that you are seeing, a number of Republicans kind of jumping on the Trump train.
Although, are you seeing anybody who wants a career after 2016 doing that? But what's interesting is that there are, if you look at these, just a poll coming out today on the swing states,
right?
Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, Trump is either ahead or within the margin of error against Hillary Clinton head-to-head right
as
now,
it
today.
Stands today, which today. I think is, which it shocked me, and I think it would shock a lot of people to see it's that close.
But again, to start paying too much attention to general election polls this far away, I mean, yeah, we all like our polls and it's something to talk mm-hmm. about, but at the same time, in as I've always said, in politics, so many things can happen that are not even a factor that a candidate can control. World events may take place, things like that that can influence how we ultimately vote. And yeah, I'm like everybody else that said there's no way Donald Trump's going to be the nominee. Well, that shows where the mindset of Republican primary voters are. Now, let's see where, when you bring in general election voters into that pool, where are they at this point?
Shouldn't it trouble us deeply, though, that Donald Trump is now even playing around with the value of United States Treasury bonds?
Well, and already he's backtracked off that, too, where he talked about how, you know, maybe debt holders should take a haircut. And now he's, even though that's our sovereignty, is the,
right.
you know.
He doesn't, why? How does he not know that?
Well.
If he's such a smart business guy, a billionaire, doesn't understand that Treasury bonds are the full faith and credit of the United States government? I mean, that's the world counts on that to stabilize their economy?
Well, but, you know, this is a guy who's had some business bankruptcies before, and that's
he's great
where,
with debt. He says he's great with debt.
Well, yeah, but
I'm going to renegotiate those Treasury bonds.
Right.
What are you kidding me?
What does that do to the value of Treasury bonds?
And, well, but also, you know, I think at one point he said, well, we just can print more money, too.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
We have that option.
Does he not understand that?
Right. So
I mean, it's like, I mean, and they did it. They did it after they called the quantitative easing,
correct.
Which is essentially the same. I mean, it was there was some trickification there, but what you were doing is you're trying to get an influx of cash into the system,
right?
Not tell the people that invested in that in what in 2008 and 2009 seemed like a risky venture to get involved in the United States of America's debt, but they did it anyway. And then he's going to go, by the way, I'm going to pay you about 10 cents on the dollar for what you just
right,
did. Again.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me?
So now he's backtracked off that. And that's the thing, you know,
he's a rookie. I can't believe, I mean, I wouldn't, I'm not as good with money as Donald Trump is, apparently, because I'm sitting here. And I'm going to tell you something right now. I know better. How does he not know better?
But that's the great thing about this news cycle that we live in, where the 24-hour news cycle mm-hmm. is, because truly we're going to be whiplashed more than ever by what he says at one point versus then the criticism comes or whatever, and then it's going to be something different.
Who? I know we got to get it out of the way here for Judy's news, but who is the person who pulls him in and says, you can't say that? Is it George, the guy from The Apprentice? I think it is. It's the only guy I think that
like
he listens
adult
to.
In the room.
Right, he pulls him in and goes, Mr. Trump.
It's not Christie. Yeah. It's not Omarosa.
No.
Not yet.
Patricia Pearson.
Not yet.
Right, I think if it were Omarosa, that would be really funny. If she's the stable one in the whole deal. I mean, if it's George, you go, Donald, you can't say that.
It can't be.
What do you mean I can't say that? No, you can't say that. Full faith and credit in the United States. I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess that was dumb of me to say. All right, Rick, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Rick.
You being
hey, thanks,
here.
Guys.